Good morning, early birds. You've caught the weekend worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week. A heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week. It is the first weekend of June 2026, Saturday the 6th and Sunday the 7th. From the latest National Weather Service discussion on the region's conditions coming up, scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms develop mainly along and east of I-15 this afternoon. Another round of scattered to widespread showers with isolated thunderstorms expected on Sunday. Breezy winds develop this weekend, especially in southwest Montana, and an active cooler weather pattern is on tap Tuesday through the work week. It's tempting to assume Montana's summer wildfire season is going to be severe following the windy, dry, and warmer-than-average winter. The official outlook released this week, however, paints a little more nuanced picture. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Dan Borsum is a meteorologist with the U.S. Wildland Fire Service who participated in Governor Greg Gianforte's 2026 fire season briefing. He's confident that eastern Montana is facing above normal fire potential through July.
And then July, we begin to see concerns develop in southwest Montana after the curing of some fuels, and that spreads into the Bitterroot in August.
The rest of the state, where many areas benefited from last weekend's heavy rain, is so far facing a normal wildfire season. The development of a powerful El Nino in the eastern Pacific Ocean might push rain into Montana by late summer. Again, Dan Borsum.
Sometimes that moisture gets infused with the monsoon, and then we end up having better monsoon activity than normal. So it's a little bit of a wild card.
Other state, local, and federal fire officials vowed seamless interagency cooperation this summer and aggressive initial attack on new fire starts. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
No surprise that politics dominated news stories this week. The Montana primary was Tuesday, June 2nd. We'll get to Edward O'Brien's wrap on how that went in just a moment, but the week started Monday with an update to the ongoing squabble between Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson and Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell. A Montana Supreme Court case is inching ahead. The court had ordered Cromwell to submit a response to Knutson's bid for dismissal. In his filing, Knutson asked for the court to reject the case as without grounds or merit. Last year, Cromwell's office denied an ICE request for non-criminal confidential information. Then in April, Knutson sent a cease and desist letter directing the Gallatin County Attorney's Office to accommodate all federal immigration enforcement requests as standard policy. Knutson took supervisory control of Cromwell's office in late April following pushback. Cromwell is asking the Supreme Court to determine how Montana's privacy laws impact a local government's legal approach toward federal immigration. The court ordered Cromwell to respond to Knutson's challenge against the legitimacy of the case by this coming Monday, June 8th. As we noted, the stage is set for Montana's November 3rd general election. Here's Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien with the results of Montana's major statewide races this week.
One of Tuesday's most closely watched races will ultimately determine who will replace two-term Republican Senator Steve Daines. Daines' hand-picked preference, Kurt Almy, coasted to victory, garnering nearly 80% of the vote. The five-way Democratic ticket, however, drew in huge spending from outside groups in support of political unknown Alani Bankhead. In the end, she trounced former state lawmaker Riley Neal by 10 points. Neal places some of the responsibility for her loss on the Montana Press Corps.
The press establishment could have covered this candidate, done some backstory on this candidate who progressed. And I understand resources are very, very limited.
When asked if she will support the Bankhead Senate campaign, Neal responded, quote, "No, I don't think so."
I don't know her. I have not seen any evidence of her commitment to Montana or Montanans.
Aaron Flint won as the Republican candidate for the Western Congressional House District. In a statement on social media Wednesday, Flint described his nomination as the honor of a lifetime. Democrat Sam Forstag secured his nomination to challenge Flint in the Western District race. He defeated Ryan Bussey, his closest competitor, by 4 points. Forstag took to social media Wednesday to thank his supporters and reassert his support for working Montanans. Incumbent Troy Downing is the GOP candidate for the Eastern House District by default after running in an uncontested primary. Brian Miller won the Democratic contest in that district. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Wyomingites have 12 candidates to choose from to represent the state in the U.S. House. That includes 10 Republicans and 2 Democrats, all vying for the lone House seat. The U.S. Senate race is also crowded with 5 Republicans and 2 Democrats running. Other races that are heating up for the governorship, 4 Republicans will run against 1 Democrat. And the Secretary of State, that's the state's top election official, 5 Republicans running and 1 Democrat. In the state legislature, newcomers are challenging some members of the more conservative Freedom Caucus, which will try to hold on to its majority in the state house. Plus, several Freedom Caucus representatives are trying to switch to the Senate. Wyoming's primary election is August 18th. Wyoming Secretary of State Chuck Gray has called for the state to reconsider how electoral maps are drawn near the Wind River Indian Reservation, and tribal governments are pushing back, according to a new WyoFile report. Eric Galatas with the Wyoming News Service filed this story.
State government and politics reporter Maggie Mullen says Gray sent letters to both Governor Mark Gordon and the Fremont County Commission, citing a new U.S. Supreme Court ruling that narrows the ability of states to use race as a determining factor in drawing maps. Gray argues that maps created for House District 33 and Fremont County are unconstitutional because they consider race.
Both the Eastern Shoshone and the Northern Arapaho, they have come out and denounced Secretary of State Chuck Gray and have called these letters and what the Secretary is suggesting a direct attack on Native voting.
Both tribes are calling on elected officials and voters to reject efforts they warn would undermine the principles of representative democracy. Gray says the Supreme Court's Louisiana v. Calais decision applies across the United States, including in Wyoming, and that drawing districts based on race is a blatant violation of the United States Constitution. I'm Eric Galatas.
And the U.S. Senate on Tuesday confirmed former Montana Solicitor General Katie Lane as one of the state's 3 federal judges. Lane served under Republican Attorney General Austin Knutson and most recently worked as counsel for the Republican National Committee. Lane was the first judicial nominee of President Trump's second term to be rated as unqualified by the American Bar Association. It said she had less than the organization's recommended 12 years of experience in law and has never tried a case as lead counsel. 32-year-old Lane could serve decades on the bench. Federal judges are not term limited. Dozens of Laurel residents attended a tense public hearing on Election Day to weigh in on a forensic behavioral health facility proposed just outside Laurel city limits. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche has more from the Billings Hotel and Convention Center.
Over 30 people voiced their opposition at the public hearing, not just against the behavioral health facility, which they say is more like a psychiatric prison, but also the way it's moving ahead. According to state documents, the facility would house people who plead not guilty by way of insanity or who need further evaluation before they go to trial. Cynthia Clout is a member of Laurel Cared, a group of citizens that organized earlier this year when they learned the state had selected their community for the site.
We all here, I believe, want mental health resources for the sick individuals in our society. I don't know how many times I can explain that this is not it.
The state advertised the public hearing as a way to give input to the Board of Investments and Department of Health and Human Services on the facility's environmental assessment. Joni McKay is in her third year on the Laurel City Council and spoke directly to Board of Investments Director Dan Villa, who sat at the front of the room with a Department of Public Health and Human Services staff attorney.
This process has been messy at its best and downright questionable at its worst. This community has begged for meaningful engagement and opportunity to be heard and respected. While I appreciate your presence today and this opportunity, we all know this whole thing has not been done right.
The selected property is over 100 acres. It's located just outside Laurel City limits and the area where Jeremy Lovold says his family works and goes to school.
It is less than 500 yards from my child's educational facility. I do not want something like that close.
Kathy Herr says she feels like the state is proceeding regardless of community objections.
It's like, what part of no don't you understand?
Villa declined to speak with Yellowstone Public Radio until after the end of the public comment period. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Governor Mark Gordon signed an executive order this week welcoming new data centers while asking state agencies to ensure they're developed responsibly. That means encouraging centers to pay the costs for increasing energy demand in the area and provide permanent jobs to Wyomingites. It also asks them to protect water and wildlife and be transparent. John Burroughs with the nonprofit Wyoming Outdoor Council says it is a good first step.
Our hope is that the framework that this establishes actually has some teeth to address the concerns that Wyomingites care about and are speaking up about.
The order itself does not change any policies, but state agencies now have 60 days to provide recommendations for changes and potential legislative actions. It comes as community members grapple with a growing number of data center proposals statewide. A federal program that helps Butte and Walkerville residents clean up lead contamination is changing. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports the new proposed rules will mean more locals will be able to decontaminate their homes.
Decades of smelting and mining activity left contaminants, including lead, in Butte soil and dust. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Monday formally proposed lowering the lead levels that require cleanup by two-thirds. A lower threshold means more people will have access to the program. Officials also want to expand the boundary of the cleanup area to include another 7,100 homes. Homes with the most vulnerable populations, including those with young children and pregnant and nursing mothers, would continue to be prioritized. EPA's proposal undergoes a 30-day public comment period through June 30th. A formal public meeting will be held June 16th at Montana Tech. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Land and wildlife managers are limiting camping along a section of the Yellowstone River in Park County because of grizzly bear activity. The Bureau of Land Management this week announced that only hard-sided camping structures will be allowed at Carbella Recreation Site this summer and fall. The order prohibits soft tents, pop-up campers, and canvas-sided vehicles. Staff say the restrictions are to decrease the likelihood of human-bear encounters, which are common in the area. The order is in place through the end of the year. Wyoming is close to designating a migration corridor for pronghorn, a move conservation biologist Joel Berger has long supported. Berger has tracked this effort since the early 2000s. Back then, he urged action to protect pronghorn moving through areas affected by natural gas development. This week, a working group appointed by Governor Mark Gordon completed its review of the corridor. The recommendations will soon reach the governor. The process has faced resistance from industries and counties, but no working group members voted against the designation. One member, oil and gas industry representative Jasmine Allison, voted to let the designation go forward with serious reservations. Two others, agriculture industry representative Mike Henn and mining industry representative Craig Rood, voted to designate with reservation. The other eight members were fully on board. President Donald Trump announced a $700 million investment in coal this week, and Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon was at the White House in support. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Mersbach has more.
Beautiful, clean coal. That's how Trump referred to the energy source that's been in decline for almost two decades.
You're not allowed to say coal within the Trump administration unless it's preceded by the words clean, beautiful.
Trump says he'll extend the life of 13 plants, one of which is in Arizona, plus open three new plants and a new terminal in Oakland, California. That could export coal from New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, whose Governor Mark Gordon says this will help access the Asian market.
Absolutely essential for the lifeblood of our state and for our coal mines.
Supporters say Trump's latest coal investment will help keep electricity prices down, while the Environmental Defense Fund says it'll do the opposite and increase pollution. It comes as the feds block development of renewables such as wind and solar. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
Wyoming announced its first confirmed case of rabies for 2026. The Wyoming Department of Health reported in a news release this week that a rabid bat was found in a backyard of a home in Sheridan County in May. There were six confirmed cases of rabies in Wyoming in 2025. The most common carriers of rabies in Wyoming are bats and skunks, but any mammal can become infected. Infection comes from bites and scratches of animals with rabies. Medical officials report rabies is a fatal but preventable disease. They say people should wash these bites and scratches immediately with soap and water and immediately contact a medical professional. They advise vaccinating dogs, cats, ferrets, horses, and other selected livestock and keeping vaccinations up to date. Montana's tribes are losing their native languages. At least three indigenous languages in the state are considered critically endangered. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports on a summit working to change that.
The Montana Early Childhood Tribal Language Summit isn't exactly like other conferences. There are keynote speakers and panels, but there are also stories and songs spoken in traditional languages. Educators, parents, state and tribal government representatives are here to find ways to revitalize and sustain indigenous languages pushed to the brink of extinction. 75-year-old Peggy Myers is one of just roughly 60 fluent Cree speakers left on the Rocky Boy Reservation. As a child, she only spoke Cree, but as she grew older, that changed.
The longer I went to school, the longer I spoke, it became shameful. You know, I was ashamed to talk my language. And I was a feisty one.
Myers witnessed firsthand the loss of her language in their community as forced assimilation played out over the decades. But educators like Bert Medicine Bull, who teaches Northern Plains Sign Language, are working to sustain them.
What little I know, I learned it when I was living with my grandparents as a little boy. It's really important to have that. It's another form of communication.
At the summit, attendees organize plans to bolster language programs, shared curriculums, integrate more tribal languages into classrooms, and use new technology to help. Darren Small, an elder and Cree speaker from Rocky Boy, says the needle is moving in the right direction.
These younger ones, when they're speaking up and they're talking Cree to us, and we're there and we're listening, and that's telling us that, well, the elders must be doing something good to where they're speaking the language to us.
Today, Meyer's message to those revitalizing their language is
Akameimuk. Keep trying.
Reporting from Bozeman, I'm Victoria Traxler.
University of Montana administrators say the recent decision to terminate the school's master's degree in literature came down to limited resources. Campus leaders moved to end the century-old program this semester despite pushback from students and faculty. The termination means stipends that would have gone to the graduate program's teaching assistants will be spent elsewhere. UM Vice Provost Jean DeBoer didn't say exactly where, but did tell Montana Public Radio the university is working to keep up its research output.
It's not a plot it's a reality of how we are structured as an institution, how we're funded. I think that that's a reality everybody's going to have to accept on campus.
The university will teach out the remaining students in the Literature Master's program. Some students and faculty say administration hasn't fully justified the decision to terminate the century-old degree. The University of Montana holds Montana Public Radio's broadcast license, but MTPR is editorially independent. Opera Montana's A River Runs Through It is wending its way toward its premiere this fall. Norman MacLean's beloved elegy to family and fly fishing in Montana is set for its world premiere in September 2026 in Bozeman, and performances will follow in October in Missoula. This is the 50th anniversary of the iconic work. Opera Montana commissioned the libretto 2 years ago, bringing on Matt Foss and Kelly Rourke to reimagine the story as a live performance piece. Composer Zach Redler then worked with the librettists to shape the story as an opera. As the concept came to paper, three performance workshops over the last year tightened the book and music. In May, Opera Montana took the river through a workshop in Brooklyn to build national industry and press attention. Susan Miller is Opera Montana's general director.
A lot of feedback was that this was a breath of fresh air. A librettist friend in the industry said, "It was really nice to hear an opera that dealt with real people as opposed to just issues."
Over the summer, Opera Montana will again workshop the piece at five different Montana locations: Pine Creek Lodge, Red Ants Pants Festival, Riverhouse Barbecue presents at Warren Miller Performing Arts Center, Sweet Pea, and at Bozeman's Duck Pond. Opera Montana's A River Runs Through It world premiere again is September at the Ellen Theater in Bozeman, with additional October performances in Missoula. For more about A River Runs Through Its journey, its East Coast workshop, and its world premiere, you can visit operamontana.org. Finally, the price of gas in Montana dropped over the last few days. A news release this week from AAA Mountain West Group reported the average price for a gallon of regular gasoline dropped 17 cents in Montana, down to $4.38. Nationally, the average for a gallon of regular gas is down 18 cents to $4.24. Average price of a gallon of regular gasoline in Billings is $4.33, Great Falls $4.40, and Missoula $4.45. AAA reports the most expensive gasoline market is California at $5.97 a gallon, and the least expensive, Indiana, at $3.55 a gallon. AAA reports the price of crude oil remains below $100 per barrel. According to new data from the Energy Information Administration, gasoline demand decreased last week, while the total domestic gasoline supply increased. That's the Weekend Worm for this first weekend of June 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm on Monday, and we'll keep the weekend editions coming too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.